Good morning and welcome to week three. I apologize for this room setup, but it is apparently necessary. Okay, people like it, even better. I don't like it so much. I like for everybody in the class to see each other and have the chance to actually communicate, but it's what we needed because the rectangle wasn't cutting it, so this is what we have. I do expect the next class will be smaller just because it's a January class, so at that point we'll be able to go back to the rectangle. You'll see out on the tables a flyer for a program for those who are around at the end of December, Tuesday, December 25th, in case you have nothing else to do. Heroes and Villains, 10 Heroes and 10 Villains, because it's the 10th year of my Beit Midrash program in Toronto. So we're celebrating with 10 Heroes and 10 Villains, 30-minute classes, hopefully accessible to pretty much everybody, and it's free of charge. You can be there from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. There's even a free lunch, light lunch, and ice cream at the end. Or you can just come for a particular session, either way. But not there. So 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Hopefully people will be able to make it. No, the V is for villain, but you can do what you want with that. The H is for heroes, V is for... It's actually very funny because we have sponsorship possibilities. People can sponsor a particular class, and all the hero ones have been grabbed, and no one wants to dedicate a villain. I figure, pick your favorite enemy and say, I am dedicating a class on Satan, too. You know, it's a good way to send a message. I don't know. So far, none on the villains. But in any case, that's coming up on December 25th. I hope people will be able to make it if they are in town. We have two topics today that we really have to finish off. First of all, the cosmetic surgery topic. We have one last note, an important one, on that. And then moving on to the issue of healthcare costs, charging for healthcare. And I really want to wrap that up today as well, because that will give us a full hour next time to talk about medical assistance in dying, which is such a large issue in the headlines again. Yesterday, for those who heard the news out of Europe, there was another one, but a very controversial one. That'll be a topic for next week. Cosmetic surgery, elective cosmetic surgery. So we set out our terms last week. Our basic questions were, under what circumstances, if ever, am I allowed to physically alter my body, both in terms of harming myself potentially and in terms of the risk involved that things don't work out the way that one expected? And then second, is beautification a respected value in Judaism? So we went through the issue of physically altering one's body. We talked about biblical sources that say one is not allowed to harm oneself, one is not allowed to self-harm or to risk harm. At the same time, we said that where there is a particular benefit which justifies the action, then indeed one may be permitted to risk harm. Example, somebody who wants to earn a living and needs to work in a dangerous career. So there's a difference. There are levels of danger. But at some level, certainly, it may be justified, even though one endangers one's self. Then we moved to the second question, which was the beautification one. And we asked, is beautification a respected value in Judaism? Is it sufficient to justify risk? So we talked about the question of whether this whole concept of self-beautification, of modifying the body, might be considered wrong, because we are changing divine creation, we are improving on divine creation, and our answer was no, that's not a problem. And we have many sources to support the idea that God puts us here on this planet with the expectation, in fact, that we are going to work on what we see around us, including ourselves, and that we are going to improve. God left us room to achieve. That brings us to the last point that we need to address here, which is, okay, I understand now that I am allowed to risk harm in order to gain an appropriate benefit. I understand that it is within the purview of a human being, in fact, to improve on the world into which we enter. But is beautification an appropriate pursuit? Is that a justification for risk? When we're talking about, again, something that is elective, We're not talking about somebody who was in a fire or whatever, God forbid, and suffered some kind of harm. We're talking about somebody who simply does not like the way they look. But of course, it doesn't mean, you know, something as light as that, because it may affect their self-perception, it may affect their self-esteem. How do we view the act of beautifying oneself through surgery? We're not talking makeup now, as a means of dealing with dissatisfaction with one's personal appearance. Before we see the sources from the Torah, what would you say? Yeah, Marilyn.
Well, if someone makes a living with their face, if they're on public television, if they're in the acting profession, and that's very important.
Right. So that's true. Meaning, even within what we've described here, there are divisions. There are different classes. There would be the person who says they need this financially, because of their career, whether it's something very direct, where somebody needs to have a certain appearance in order to have their job, or even indirect, if they feel like they're having trouble reaching people, if they feel like they're having trouble associating with others, and they associate that with the way they look.
Judith. Well, except for Barbara Stein and the lady with the big nose, was going to be able to catch a husband, and I think most of them would say it's okay to fix it.
Well, that's what I ask you. Yes.
I think it's it makes a difference how people see beauty and how God sees it. Let's say when I mentioned last time, when Rachel was beautiful, and that's why she was loved, and Leah was the Snuah. But because of this, God gave her children, and Rachel not, because he saw that she was Snuah.
Yeah.
And the same is, I think, with Achashverosh and with Esther. For him, it was important, but not for Mordechai. So he, Shisha Hodashim B'Shem Elamor, Shisha Hodashim B'Samim, that she would be more beautiful than she is.
Yeah.
But for Mordechai, it's a... That's not why you're here. You are here to help. So I think
right. Okay. So Muhammad makes the point that biblically you find that those who are impressed with beauty are not necessarily the heroes. To go back to the heroes and villains example, they think of King Ahasuerus. He's impressed by beauty, whereas God looks past that and tries to help those like Leah, who are described as not being as beautiful as their rivals. I think that was essentially where you were going with it. That was, yeah. Okay, Susan.
Sure, you have the beautiful woman and she's chased. I mean, they play both sides. But it's still a lot of expression that talk about God and beauty.
Yeah. Oh no. Absolutely. Susan points out that Song of Songs, with its parable describing the love relationship between God and the Jews, where it puts it into the form of a love relationship between human beings, emphasizes beauty as part of that. And absolutely, absolutely, that's true. I think it's recognized that as part. It's fundamental to human relationships. At the same time, that doesn't mean that it's trusted. If you take a look on your sheet, it's source number one. Classic line from the poem Eshet Chayil. Right? Who wrote Eshet Chayil? Sorry? Sorry? Not King David. Nope. Sort of Solomon. Now we're getting warmer. Someone who's related to both David and Solomon. Bathsheba. Bathsheba. Meaning, the beginning of that chapter, Proverbs in general is associated with Shlomo HaMelech, with King Solomon. But the beginning of the last chapter tells us that this is the rebuke that his mother gave him. Solomon's mother being Bathsheba. And this is the lesson that she gives him about, first, it begins before the Eshet Chayil, before the classic Woman of Valor poem, it begins with lessons about what he should be doing with his time, what he should be doing with his energies, and then she talks to him about the type of wife he should seek. And that's what begins with Eshet Chayil Mi Yimtza. What's he supposed to be looking for? And one of the lines that Bathsheba says, one of the things that she says to him is the line in source number one. In Hebrew, it is Sheker Hachein Behebel Ayofi Isha Yirat Hashem Hitit Halal. Charm is false, beauty is vapor. And as it concludes, a woman who reveres God is to be praised. Suggesting that beauty ain't all it's cracked up to be. Along the lines of what Ruchama was saying before. At the same time, the Torah does play up the beauty of particular figures, such as, source number two, Rachel, our matriarch. She is described as being Yifat Toar V'Tovat Mar'eh, of beautiful features, beautiful appearance, and it's passed down to her son, Joseph, who is described with the exact same terms. So even if you're going to tell me, as some commentators do, that this text about Rachel is meant to allude to inner beauty, nonetheless, the Torah chooses to frame it in terms of physical beauty. Meaning, the Torah has plenty of terms for inner spiritual beauty. It talks about being merciful, it talks about being compassionate, it talks about being generous, it talks about all of the wonderful traits, pure of heart, and so on. The Torah has no shortage of spiritual terminology when it wants to describe spiritual beauty. The fact that it chooses to identify Rachel with physical beauty does convey a certain sense of value, that this is something of significance. Now, in that story, it may be viewed as a plot point in terms of her relationship with her soon-to-be husband, Jacob. But I think we need to recognize that it does have a certain value and that the verses themselves are conveying mixed messages. On the one hand, I have Proverbs telling me, forget it, beauty is deceptive. And then on the other hand, I'm told that Rachel actually is a woman of great beauty and it is, seems to be praised there. Shir Hashirim, Song of Songs, as another example of it. I think also, besides beauty, beauty itself, to go back to what I had said a couple of minutes ago, you have to weigh the impact it has on self-esteem. We are taught, in source number three, you see it on the sheet, we've seen this verse in various contexts, that God creates human beings in a special image. In the image designed by God, He created him, male and female, He created them. That the human being's image should be, a person should look at oneself as being in the image of God, and to respect ourselves accordingly, and to respect others accordingly. Yeah, there's a fascinating passage in the Jerusalem Talmud in which they discuss which verses are, so to speak, the most important in the Torah. And one of the sages says, love thy neighbor as thyself. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, that's the most important verse in the Torah. That's not a bad commandment. Like that's not a bad candidate for top verse in the Torah. However, it is improved upon with a verse which states, it's not the same one as in number three, but it's a related verse which says, again, that human beings were created in the image designated for them by God. And that's more important than love your neighbor as yourself. Why is that more important? Why is it more important to say that human beings are created in the image of God, even more important than love your neighbor as yourself? Yeah?
It has to do with honoring God through your presence and your life.
Okay. That's one. Honoring God through, would you say, through your interaction?
Your life and what you do.
In the way you live. So it's about what you do, possibly. There was
self-esteem.
And esteem for others. Meaning it's one thing to say that you have to love others. It's another thing to say you have to honor them. To recognize in them, to recognize in the people around us, that they are also in the image of God, is stronger than an imperative that says, be good to them. It's not just about being good to them. If it's about me being good to them, it's really about me. Right? Whatever my imperative is to do for others, it's really about me. Whereas saying that they're created in the image of God makes it about them and what they deserve. And it's very important that we have that kind of respect for this image of God that we're given, and it comes through in all sorts of biblical verses. So, for example, source number four is just one example, but you could bring the whole book, so to speak. You shall not curse the deaf. You shall not place a stumbling block before the blind. You have to safeguard the dignity of others, and it's not just about a stumbling block that could physically harm them, But it's also about their dignity. Not to curse the person who can't hear you, as one example of that. So that from that perspective, it becomes very, very important that we look at the effect of this person's beauty or this person's appearance on their self-esteem. There was a class I gave, maybe I'll send out a link in the follow-up email from today. I gave a class on mental health and human dignity. And I read a remarkable paper. It was really stunning. They did a paper on teenage self-harm. And the question of why it is that certain teens will in fact engage in self-harm or will tolerate harmful situations longer than others. And what they discovered in this, it was really a meta-study, it was a study of other studies, is that very often, extremely high percentage, I forget the exact number or I would state it, they found that the teens who are involved have a negative self-image. And it makes sense to them that they should be harmed. Like there's a logic to it for them. This is what I deserve type of a thing. That's how important self-esteem is. And not just in an adolescent, although adolescents are uniquely vulnerable, but throughout a person's life. And so for that reason, self-image matters a great deal. Now you have to play the other side as well. Which is to say, if a person has a self-esteem issue, which is embedded for some psychological reason, you're not necessarily going to solve it with a surgery. Right? If there's something inside that is driving them this way, some experience that they've had, some relationship that they've had, which has put them into this mode of thinking, so they'll have the surgery, and then they'll look in the mirror, and they'll think something else is wrong, or they didn't do it right, or whatever the reaction is going to be. So there really has to be consultation involved. This isn't something where you just say, okay, we've solved the problem. But at the same time, there is the argument that beauty is not only a physical thing, where you could write it off and say, well, it's skin deep and so on, but it also is a factor in self-esteem, and therefore it has to be taken more seriously. You can't simply wash it away with, well, charm is false and beauty is vapor, and therefore you shouldn't engage in it. The result of this is great conflict within rabbinic rulings on these sorts of surgeries. Take a look at sources 5 and 6, and you'll see what I mean. These are two early responses on elective cosmetic surgery. There's been much more material since these came out. These came out 50 years ago. But I just wanted to bring them to show you the back and forth. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was approached by a young woman who was having difficulty finding a spouse, and she felt that it was indeed because of her facial features, and she wanted surgery. And Rabbi Feinstein discusses the back and forth in his responsum on this, and he says it appears that there is room to permit this woman to beautify herself, even though it occurs via wounding, meaning the surgery, since the wounding is not performed in a manner of victory or humiliation, but just the opposite for her benefit. This isn't the wounding that is prohibited. The wounding that's prohibited is somebody punches somebody else. That's the type of wounding that is prohibited. This is a surgery. It's medical as far as he is concerned. It is for her benefit, and therefore Rabbi Feinstein rules that this is permitted. Contrast that with Rabbi Waldenberg in source number 6, who says, absolutely not. He says, it is ridiculous to propose to permit these surgeries via midrashic texts, which praise women's beauty. Any woman who has awe of God in her heart will not be drawn after these plastic surgeries for mere beauty. He is absolutely confident that this is not to be done. You see the two sides. And Rabbi Waldenberg is not somebody who lacks compassion. Right, we read him last week when we talked about abortion and the case of the Tay-Sachs pregnancy, and he was willing to allow it up to 7 months. He was willing to allow the abortion, and he made the case for the suffering that not just the child will go through, that the family will go through. He's not somebody without compassion, but he looks at the issue, weighs the different sides, and this is what he sees. Susan.
It's more of a female issue than a male issue. And, women are more concerned with their beauty, too. And their consideration is never taken where everybody else there, nowhere in the Torah does it talk about how he felt about all of this. And here again, it's all men, where many of these issues, abortion, affect women, and they are never concerned.
So Susan makes a really important point, which whether one agrees about the particular case of cosmetic surgery or not, because I heard some rumbling when she said that this is more about women than about men, and I'm not going anywhere near that. But I think your overall point is certainly well taken. Meaning, we're talking about, hang on, my turn, we're talking about, abortion last week. Right? Or, again, cosmetic surgery this week, and it's true that the two cases that we just quoted are female-oriented. That's certainly true. Where is the room? If the woman is not the one writing the responsum, so where is the room for that input to come into play? So, I'll say two things. Number one is that any good authority is going to be consulting with the people who are affected by this. Meaning, no one responsible writes a responsum on this without having done the consultation. That's number one. But number two, and more important, is I think that there is room and there should be a series which really, in which we address this question. It's really beyond the scope of what we're talking about here. But I think it's an interesting idea. I've been trying to figure out new topics for new series. So the issue of the male writing a responsum, I have to figure out how to frame it and how this becomes a mini-series, but I think it's a good idea for a topic. So look at the list. We already set the topics for this year, but look at the list beyond. I expect to try to deal with this somehow, because you're right. It's a topic that needs discussion. Okay. I'm going to move on to the next topic for today. I see your hand, Stephen. I apologize, but there's a lot to do here. Okay.